This week on Hacker and the Fed, we have Andrew Morris, CEO and founder of Graynoise on the show. Graynoise is a cybersecurity company that collects and analyzes mass internet data to remove pointless security alerts, find compromised devices, or identify emerging threats. We talk internet honeypots, how to get into the cybersecurity industry, and much more.
Hector Monsiger was responsible for some of the most notorious hacks
former
ever.
Former FBI special agent Chris Tarbell.
Hacker turned FBI informant.
Participated in some of the world's most infamous hacks.
It caused up to $50 million in damages.
A life in the shadows.
Cyber attacks on the rise.
Welcome to Hacker and the Fed. I'm Chris Tarbell, former FBI special agent, working my entire career in cybersecurity, and now a founding partner at Naxo. I'm joined, as always, by my friend and podcast co-host, Hector Monsiger. Hector's a former black hat hacker who once faced 125 years in prison for his many years of hacking under the codename Sabu. Our stories collided in June of 2011 when I arrested him and convinced him to work with the FBI. Hector is now a red teamer, researcher, and cybersecurity expert. Hector, super excited today. We got a special guest joining us, Andrew Morris, founder and CEO of Graynoise. And for the listeners out there, Graynoise is a cybersecurity company based in Washington, D.C. that analyzes scans and attack traffic across the internet. Andrew, welcome to Hacker in the Fed.
Hey, Chris, Hector, thank you guys so much for having me here. I'm just jazzed to be here. It's always always a pleasure to chat with Hector and Chris. It's great to chat with you too. So I'm stoked.
Thanks, Andrew. So guys out there, you can find Graynoise at graynoise.io, and you can find Andrew on X, formerly known as Twitter. You know my feelings on that one. At Andrew__Morris. That's three underscores. And you can find his company at graynoise.io. So check them out, see what those guys are doing. Hector, you have a very interesting story of how you and Andrew came together. Why don't you start us off with that?
Yeah, no. I mean, well, first off, Andrew, thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, man, are you kidding? Dude, I would do this any day, all day, any day. It's the funniest thing how you and me met. How we became buddies. Well, I want to hear your side of it first. I'm gonna give you my side.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you my side. And from my side, it was quite random. I'll be very honest. It was random. You and I really didn't interact before, or maybe we did, but we had pseudonyms. But up to that point, I was like, "Who is this Andrew Morris guy? Is he gonna whack me if I meet up with him?"
That's not a joke, by the way. That's probably what was actually going through your mind.
It's not a joke because at that time, that's after I came out of prison and I was unbanned off the internet. There was a point where I could not get on the internet for several years. And then here I am. I'm online. I have a public email. And then you reach out to me and you're like, hey, let's definitely link up if you're in the area. And I just so happened to be in Washington, D.C. at that time frame. And we just met up in like the hotel lobby, and
we
just
met up in the hotel lobby. We had some drinks. You had your boy with you, and I think it was like we were maybe gonna chat for like, I don't know, like, you know, an hour or whatever. We talked all night. We were there for hours, man.
Oh yeah,
hours just nerding out. It was so much fun.
It was very fun. It was very cool. And I needed that. I'll be very honest with you. I needed that because I felt at the time. I felt very ostracized. Obviously, I was dealing with the consequences of my actions. Mm-hmm. And so I felt very alone. And, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to meet this guy. He seems pretty cool. And we did. And, we hit it off. It was a great conversation. We nerded out, like you said, for hours. But no, there was a point where I was like, I think this guy might whack me. So let me make sure I have a witness there just in case. And I had a good friend of mine who's in the Army. He was a military police, and he was there with me, just kind of observing.
Yeah. He was nice too, but I could tell he would have snapped me in half in a second if it came to it. My side of this was a little different. It was so me meeting you years and years ago. So it was before you went to prison,
sure.
And it was on IRC, and mm-hmm. I was handled up. Obviously, you were handled up, and I have this fixation, and I've always had it with like. Just hitting people up on the internet, right? Like people who under no circumstances you would ever like meet. Like I'll email CEOs of publicly traded companies. I'll email government officials. I'll email anybody. I'll just fire them an email. I'm like, you'd be surprised how often people get back to you. So at the time, it was like I knew where you were idling in IRC. So I hopped on and I DM'd you. This is like, whatever. This is like,
maybe like 2011, 2010.
It was 2011, actually. It was 2011. Yeah. And I hit you up and I messaged you and I was like, yo, hey, like, you don't know me. I don't know you, but I just wanted to say hello and chat, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we've actually very briefly nerded out. And I remember it perfectly. I was just like, because to me, you want to know where the good stuff happens, where the good tactics are. I wanted to be a pen tester. So I was like, where could I possibly learn better ways to get into systems than like overt black hats? You know what I mean? Like, man, they will, you know, if you can get them to tell you, they will. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm hitting you up, right? And I remember asking you, like, are there any kinds of like bug classes that you're into right now? And you were like, you know, actually, I'm kind of keen on hypervisor security right now, because, you know, if you can get into the hypervisor, then really you can kind of get into all of the boxes on top of that. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of any kind of concept like that. And I was like, man, this guy's like, this guy lives in the future. He's not even talking about popping boxes. He's talking about popping like entire data centers. And I was like, yo, this is sick.
Depending on the time that you hit me, right, that you hit me up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, for the audience, when he said handled up, it means we were using pseudonyms, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't, my name wasn't Andrew, and Hector's name certainly wasn't Hector.
No. But depending on when you hit me up, I had just received a source code for VMware. Oh, that was a bad leak. And so you probably hit me up after that.
Yeah, probably. You get out of prison, and I see it on the news. So I see on the news, and I'm working at Endgame, a company that you had some kind of interesting history with as well. Again, I had the same thought that I've had a million times before. Like, I got to email this guy.
Yeah.
Like, you got out of prison, and I remember thinking to myself, like, you probably, like, it's probably rough for you right now. And, like, you probably don't have a ton of friends in the industry and stuff like that. And I was just like, dude, I got to hit this guy up. He was cool those years ago. I'm sure he's cool now, and I'm sure he'd appreciate it. I fired you a note. I just said, hey, man, like, I don't know if you remember this, blah, blah, blah. And you hit me right back, and we were chatting. And then again, and then the rest was history. Like, I bounced. You said, hey, I'm over at this hotel. And I was like, yo, let's go.
Let's do it.
And I went over there. Let's do it. And I went over there, and I remember you were a foot and a half taller than me. And I was just like, yo, whose security is whom right now? And we talked about software vulnerabilities. We talked about how all these different hacker crews were operating.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about, man, it was awesome, dude. I remember just thinking, like, so vindicated, like, there's so much to learn from all these people who have been doing this stuff for a long time. This is worth its weight in gold to me. And it was just a fun time, man. It was a really good time.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the cool things about that is that, you know, after we met, you know, I learned early on that you were a very good person. And this one thing I learned from a guy named Red Curry. You probably run into him through RSA. Red Curry is the brother of Sam Curry from Zscaler. And you know what I learned from Red? Red is one of those guys. He's very family oriented. And so he's applied that to his life in the industry, right? Our industry. Mm-hmm. And so he likes to keep people that are good and then just, like, you know, keep in business with people that are not so good, you know, toxic and so on. And because of him, I've learned to, you know, when I meet someone like you, right, I'm like, I got to keep this guy in my life and then, you know, keep that network going and so on. And thanks to folks like Red, his brother Sam, and then, of course, meeting you and so on, I feel very blessed to be part of an industry and have a very – it might be a small circle, right? But I feel very blessed to have you guys in my life. And so, and I throw this out there so that Reed could hear this. When I met Reed, I felt the same way. All right.
Yeah. Reed's the man.
Yeah. Absolutely. And for those that you don't know, I went to Black Hat this last week in Vegas, and I saw a guy walking around with a Gray Noise shirt. I was like, wait, I got to stop him. And I just ran up to him. So if he was like, oh my God, this guy's about to rob me or whatever, I don't know. But I just ran up to him like, hey, are you with Gray Noise? Or that's just like merch. He's like, no, I'm with Gray Noise. I'm like the chief director of IT or security. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, hey, how you doing? My name is Hector Monsinger. I'm a friend of your...
I get it. Oh, he knows who you are instantly. Of course he does. He says, I get this selfie from Hector and Reed. And I'm like, yo! Oh, sick, dude.
Oh, yeah. So that's great. And big shout out to you and big shout out to your team. Because, you know, one thing that I'm noticing, just by meeting Reed, is that you're taking the same approach. You know, you're getting good people.
We have an incredible team at Gray Noise. Honestly, we have an incredible team. Like, there's only so far that you can go just by yourself on your own merits or whatever. Like,
sure.
The Gray Noise stopped being the Andrew Show a long time ago. And now we've got a ton of just the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And they're good people. Like people you want to hang out with, people you want to get to know, people you want to know for the rest of your life. Good people.
Can you tell us what Gray Noise is doing these days?
Oh, yeah. So, all right. Right now, we're doing a couple of things, but there's a few things that I'm real stoked about. So right now, we are in the process of making some really serious sort of... So we operate honeypots across the internet. That's what we do. We run thousands of honeypots across the internet. I've got honeypots in every single hosting provider of every country you could possibly think of. Right now, I think we're in maybe like 40-ish countries. We're like 40-ish different hosting providers. Every region, about 30, 40 hosting providers. And looking at honeypot traffic from one system is not that interesting. Looking at honeypot traffic from 10 systems is kind of interesting. Looking at honeypot traffic from 5,000 systems in 40 different countries that are in different hosting providers, where there's different upstream internet providers and there's different ISPs and there's different cloud hosting providers, that stuff in massive aggregate in near real time is wildly interesting. And so I find that there's this big hole in the market. There's this big gap in the market where there's like all these threat intel companies and there's all these like, you know, IP abuse feeds and all this kind of stuff, but none of it's really in real time. None of it's like got the artifacts. None of them bring the receipts. You know, none of them are like looking at the software vulnerabilities that are relevant right now. And so that's kind of what we're really trying to do at Gray Noise. The big thing that I'm stoked about right now is Gray Noise has spent the last 5-6 years just running our own honeypot network, synthesizing that data and handing it over to our customers. Now our customers can run their own Gray Noise sensors. And so this is something that I'm really excited about. We had to put a lot of work into allowing our users and our customers to deploy their own Gray Noise sensors. And so this is something that I'm super excited about that we've spent the last like 6 months burning on. And so I'm really, really excited about it.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. The fact that you're allowing customers to deploy their own sensors. Like, yeah, that's definitely next level. And I also saw that you guys are, at least from your post, I saw that you guys are looking at going into AI and probably using your historical data for generating potentially your own model, right?
Yeah. So let me tell you about this. It's called SIFT internally. This is sick. All right. So like I wasn't a big AI sort of dude.
Same, yeah.
You know, I was kind of like, maybe I'm a Luddite. Maybe I'm just like, you're never going to be able to do it like me. You're never going to be able to do it like a person, right? And so... you know, time goes by, OpenAI changed a lot, the accessibility of ChatGPT changed a lot. So we built something right now at Gray Noise that's like, I mean, it'll blow your mind. So the way that this system works, what it does is it analyzes and surfaces and labels interesting traffic to us for an analyst to triage and make that final step of like whether or not we want to tag it in our raw data. Remember, Gray Noise processes a massive amount of data. We're moving a billion messages a day with not a huge team and not a huge budget, right? We're moving a billion messages a day. We got to process all those and I want to label as much of it as possible. Now, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to hit ChatGPT 1 billion times a day. I literally don't have that much money. What I am going to do is we've got some incredibly brilliant data scientists at Gray Noise. Between Daniel Grant, Remy, Matt, we've got some solid people on our research team. So what they've figured out is forget about sending a billion messages to OpenAI. What we want to do is let's actually run some clustering algorithms on our traffic. So let's do two clusterers. Let's have a binary clusterer and an HTTP clusterer, because that's pretty much kind of everything that we see by and large. So we've got those two big clusters, and what they do is they plot more or less a multidimensional array space, and they put any HTTP data or binary data in that multidimensional array space, and they cluster based on distance from one another. So we have these distinct clusters of traffic of what's happening on the internet. And then anytime there is a new cluster that emerges or branches off of an old cluster, we grab one random member of that cluster and we GPT that thing and we decorate all that. And we basically say like, hey, what is this? Do I care? And GPT then rolls through and it says, hey, this is this thing. This is what it looks like. It's probably this kind of software vulnerability. It's probably targeting this kind of thing. And I would rate it 8 out of 10 on the how much you should care score, right? So that surfaces up. Then one click, send it to an analyst, and the ticket is already there. And listen to this, it will write a Suricata signature to pick it up, a Snork signature to pick it up, a Zeek signature to pick it up, and a SQL query in Graynoise's special internal domain specific, like our data model. And it just hands them all to you. Like, here it is. It's everything that you need right here. And so we've gone from being able to tag like a few things, you know, we've always been good at tagging the data, but now it's like overdrive. We can blast through way more traffic now. And it's incredible. And this is the kind of stuff that I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I'm excited about it as well. Like when I'm not on Twitter much, but I follow you. Obviously, I follow Graynoise. I follow a few other researchers like Tavis Roman. He's done a great job recently with the CPU stuff. He's
brilliant. Found,
right? So that? Oh.
Yeah.
Big shout out to everybody there that I follow. But, you know, the one thing that I always found interesting, and this is something that you and I discussed when we met initially, was when you told me what you wanted to do, right? And you gave me a very brief overview, a summary, because obviously it was your baby who was building it out.
Yeah, I was in like year one.
Yeah. And I was in my head, I'm like, wow, this guy's thinking about, you know, setting up honeypots. And back then, you had the honeypot project and you had like a bunch of independent folks kind of running their own. But you're right. I think that, yes, even though I think that was a thing back then, it wasn't as collaborative as it could have been. It wasn't as, I would say the data was kind of hit and miss. It was here and there. There was a nice write up here and there. So I'm really glad you went that direction. Now for the audience here, a lot of our folks are listening. Some may not be understanding what a honeypot is. So can you break that down as to what honeypot really is, what it does, and how it could benefit an organization?
Yeah. So I'll start by just saying that I believe that honeypots have been a little bit misunderstood in cybersecurity for a while. And I want to try to correct that a little bit, right? Like Graynoise is in large part me trying to demonstrate that there's a right way to honeypot, and it's not quite exactly the way that the industry's always viewed it. So a honeypot by definition is basically a fake vulnerable target to lure the attacker, to allow the defender to understand the adversary and possibly be able to defend against them better, or perhaps distract them, right, from the real targets. Those are kind of, that's at a high level. So it's a fake service that's running side by side with a real production service that distracts attackers, lures them in, and it has no business purpose, right? Like there's no legitimate reason for someone to be using honeypots, so you can really effectively distill the malicious traffic or that attack traffic or that automated traffic or whatever, right? So examples of honeypots would be, you know, there's a lot of open source software that is honeypots that people have built themselves. Things like Cowrie or Kippo, things like Dianea, things like, again, Project Honeypot, all these kinds of things, right? There's a ton of these different honeypots out there. Then separately, there are actually deception companies which build commercial off-the-shelf deception technologies that are maybe more advanced, they're closed source, they're harder to fingerprint, they're built for the enterprise, blah, blah, blah. So where I disagree historically with the way that the industry has kind of viewed honeypots is that I think that we've, as an industry, sort of shoehorned or pigeonholed honeypots into, well, you're going to set these things up and we're going to learn about the attacker and we're going to then maybe waste their time forever and ever and ever. And maybe if we fool them for long enough, we can figure out what they're looking for and blah, blah, blah. And while I do think that's true and accurate, I think that it's aspirational. I think it's putting the cart before the horse. To me, I think the first place, I don't think anyone cares about honeypots. That's my opinion. And I don't think that they should. I think we should care about the data that massive amounts of honeypots create in aggregate, because that's useful. That's something I can do something with. And that's something that I can spread to the whole world without them having to run any software, right? So from my perspective, I'm like, dude, forget about honeypots. Honestly, forget about how Graynoise works and look at what we do and why. And what we do and why is I'm going to tell you, hey, look, here's 400,000 IP addresses that right now are opportunistically scanning and attacking the entirety of the internet, right? That's useful information. And here's what I can find as well. When I set up maybe 40 honeypots that look like this vulnerable version of Apache and 100 that are running this version of Exchange and then 1,000 that are running everything else, and I place these in a bunch of random places, hey, I noticed over here that I'm seeing these unique little traffic patterns, but they're only going to those Microsoft Exchange servers. And then I've got this other pool of IPs that are only targeting those vulnerable Exchange servers. So I'm like, huh, now I actually know something about how attackers are operating, what they're going up against. And then separately, look, there's all kinds of clever stuff that you can do with in terms of the data itself. For example, I can see when an IP address, when an attacker is only interested in, I don't know, for example, Taiwan, right? For some reason, this 100 IPs is only going after our sensors in Taiwan, but they've never touched my sensors anywhere else, ever, huh? How interesting is that, right? So that's the kind of data that I think is really valuable. Again, a honeypot itself is a means to an end. Forget about the honeypot. What are you looking for? What do you want? What are you going after? That's stuff that honeypots can help with, in my opinion.
Hector and I are extremely happy to partner with DeleteMe. Not only is DeleteMe a great company to work with, their product is easy to use and provides a great service for those of us who are serious about our cybersecurity. DeleteMe can be found at the domain joindeleteme.com. Again, guys, there's cyber squatters out there that are trying to glom on to DeleteMe's great product and trick you guys into going to different domains, but DeleteMe is at the domain joindeleteme.com. Hector used DeleteMe long before starting the podcast because of DeleteMe's proven track record for removing our private information from over 750 data brokers. Hector's praise of DeleteMe has convinced me to start using the services too. We talk about personally identifiable information, or PII, being stolen on the show all the time. Every week there's a new breach we discuss with millions of records being exposed. Data brokers are out there collecting your stolen information 24/7. Cyber criminals are using your personally identifiable information for things like opening lines of credit, making purchases on your credit cards, and even stealing your tax refunds. DeleteMe is working hard to remove your PII from these data brokers. DeleteMe removes private information from hundreds of data brokers. DeleteMe has over 100 million successful opt-out removals completed by their privacy advisors. The service is easy to use. Your welcome email will get you started by submitting your information. Then DeleteMe's experts will find and remove your personal information. The removal process starts, and you'll receive a detailed DeleteMe report in 7 days. Then DeleteMe scans and deletes your information all year long. DeleteMe's mission is simple: to remove customers' information from search results. As you all know and we talk about every week, this is an important step to securing your online world. Through our partnership with DeleteMe, Hacker and the Fed listeners get 20% off all consumer plans with the code FED20. That's F-E-D-2-0. So go to joindeleteme.com/fed, F-E-D, and use code FED20 for 20% off. This is a great service, and it really helps support our show. Again, go to joindeleteme.com/fed, F-E-D, and use code FED20. FED20 for 20% off all consumer plans.
Since I currently work at Avar is a value-added reseller for the audience here. Avar really is essentially, you know, a bit of an MSP or MSSP, and they also sell social security software. I'm actually able to demo a lot of products. I've seen a lot of deception software, like the ones you mentioned briefly there. And yeah, I agree. You know, some of it is very specific, and they do something very like this one product I saw that it just sits on an internal network and pretends to be a domain connected host, and that host is not supposed to receive any traffic, right? So the moment it gets an SMB authentication request, okay, boom, this is definitely an issue. So, I agree that, you know, when it comes to data, I mean, you're doing a honeypot. I think you're doing it right, okay? That's just my personal opinion, not because I know you, but I think that you're doing it right, and the market is very telling of that. Obviously, people are really going to Gray Noise and appreciating what it's doing. And even the public data set that you're offering, right? You're giving the general audience, anybody here listening, could just go to graynoise.io.
Go to graynoise.io. Yeah, go to graynoise.io, create the free account, drive through the data. It's super interesting. This is a near real-time feed of how thousands of attackers are operating. And honestly, most of it's automated by definition, right? But that doesn't mean it's not still useful or valuable data. And so that's where you can really learn a lot from how attackers are operating and finding success. Hector, if you, what does it tell you? What does it tell you that in the year of our Lord 2023, I'm still seeing Oracle WebLogic bugs popping off? I'm still seeing, like, what does that tell you?
Yeah, no, I mean, this clear issues with asset management and patch management, vulnerability management. That's for the client side, right? On the defensive side. But on the offensive side, there's still a lot of bad actors that are taking advantage of software that are not being updated.
That's right.
And it's still effective, right? It's still effective.
It's still effective. That's absolutely right. It's like they're still doing it because it's still working.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
yeah.
If you're an offensive-minded individual, whether you're at a government agency or in the private sector working as a pen tester, or you are an honest-to-God crook, yeah, right? Like, you are not going to, you know, leverage software vulnerabilities in your toolkit that don't sure work. You're gonna pick them up because you're finding success with them. And that tells me something about the kind of sad state of the internet right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's still a gazillion of these boxes that are running out on the internet, mm-hmm, and they're just ripe to be compromised. And we see literally hundreds of thousands of devices get compromised every day, which is just wild.
Oh, yeah. And so that brings me up to a question here. So I was reading one of your posts today, or I believe the last 24 hours, about Citrix ShareFile. I forgot exactly what product it was, but mm-hmm, it's a Citrix product. And some other researchers were pointing out that there's 2,000 to 5,000 vulnerable instances out there. And I think you guys mm-hmm posted that, yes, there's an active campaign. Mm-hmm. So you're able to see that. You're able to see when a campaign starts, when it hits its peak, and when it starts to die down.
Mm-hmm.
Does that technically put you in like the threat intel space, or do you ever have to partner with threat intel companies who want to kind of attribute some of that traffic to a specific group, or APT group or whatever? Is that something you have to deal with?
Yeah, so I'm going to basically, you have no idea how loaded of a question that is, but I'm going to answer. I'm going to answer it anyway.
Thank you.
Like, the honest to God truth is that Graynoise is a threat intel company, right? I mean, we're a private intelligence firm, and we try to predict the future. I want to predict the present, I want to predict the future. Threat, adversary, intelligence, predicting the future. So I kind of want to know, like, sort of what adversaries are up to. From my perspective, Graynoise started by serving a very ultra-specific niche of cybersecurity, which is opportunistic scan and attack traffic with an angle towards filtering benign and labeling unknown and malicious, right? That's how we started. And that's something that anybody can get on board with. We didn't make any enemies with that in the market. Everybody kind of welcomes that. We would partner with threat intel firms to make their products better. We sell our data to them for them to make their products better and it ultimately derive a better customer experience. So then as the years have gone by, what we figured out is like, man, you know, every time there's a big, bad, scary software vulnerability, we change what our network looks like on a dime. And then we see these patterns emerge of like, wait, I can see who's exploiting these software vulnerabilities. And then I look to Twitter, I look to the news, I look to other threat intel companies, and I'm like, hey, you guys know about this too, right? And everyone's like, no, we don't know anything about that software vulnerability. And I'm like, really? We're the only ones who know about this? So I would say that like Graynoise is a threat intelligence company. Now, like we've very much started leaning into that. And now the name of the game is like, cool, so how do we stay competitive against some of these other companies? Where Graynoise will probably not ever play is in attribution. Because honestly, it's like, we don't really care. We're really big on primary source data and information, high fidelity, near real time data of exactly what we're seeing. This is what lets us be diplomatic. This is how we say, like, look, don't shoot the messenger. Like, this is just what we saw you doing. I don't know who it is. I don't know why they're doing this, right? I could guess. But what I do know is that at this time, this IP or these IPs slung this thing at my computer at massive scale, and that's illegal, and that's unethical, and ipso facto, this IP address is malicious to me. And if you don't like it, stop trying to compromise my devices. And I find that, like, there's not enough strong opinions being taken, stern opinions being taken by threat intel companies. I think they'll deviate to, like, here's my risk score where it's 23%. I'm like, no, just tell me what you saw it doing, right? Like, tell me what you saw it doing. Give me the PCAP, give me the logs so I can figure out whether I trust you or not. I can figure out what I'm going to do about it. But yeah, I mean, I would say pretty squarely, like, Great Noise is a threat intel company. And from my perspective, I don't have a very fond opinion of the threat intelligence industry right now. I don't think that the threat intel industry, I think the threat intel industry is writing a lot of checks that they can't quite cash. And I am hoping to change that by changing the approach to, like, we're going to have to bring more data. We're going to have to bring more data. It's going to have to be better data from more places, from our customers, from our users, from my research team, which is just absolutely incredible. And this time when we tell the world about a threat that we're seeing, we don't want it to be like a big sort of like marketing thing and trying to scare the crap out of people and talking about how it's Russia, China, and Iran. Like, yeah, those things are good. But like, really, I just want to bring you those empirics. And I want to tell you as quickly as possible what you can do about it to stay safe. And those are the things that I really want to do. And so from my perspective, I think the bar is on the floor for threat intel. And so we're just trying to take a different, better first principles approach to it at Gray Noise.
Yeah, and I would say that, and there's a reason why I asked you that question. And if you actually listen to some of our podcast episodes here, Chris and I, we've been in the industry enough, him from the law enforcement perspective and me from, you know, my perspective, we've become cynical for a lot of things. And one of the things that we made fun of is that every time there's like a threat intel report that comes out, in some cases, they're not even putting IOCs or indicators or compromise in those reports. It's just making an attribution. And, you know, him as an investigator and me as a former bad guy, I'm like, well, I would like to see the data, because with the data, we could actually start working on action, right?
Okay, so I remember one of the more egregious examples of this, where it was almost the right, I've got two examples of it being almost perfect, but exactly wrong. And they're both from a long time ago. The first was Norse, the cybersecurity company. And obviously they're the butt of a lot of jokes. I'm not here to kick anyone while they're down, but they got it almost exactly right, but perfectly wrong. It was this huge attack map of like real time, blah, blah, blah. And then when you dug into the traffic, what you found is like, this is just scans. It's scanners. It's people scanning the internet, right? And it's like, not all of it's like super dangerous or bad. I mean, it's just scans, right? Like, it just is what happens on the internet, right?
Beautiful interface that they had.
Yeah,
sure.
Gorgeous interface. And to me, I'm like, they're marketing this is like, these are all the threats that you should care about. And I'm like, those are all the things you shouldn't care about, right? Like, that's the stuff that's hitting everybody. And so then I tried to do that, but the exact opposite, right? Like, we're seeing all the exact same traffic, but this is the stuff that's hitting everybody. So maybe you should pay attention to the things in between. And then the second example that I have is moving up a few years. It was the Grizzly Step report that the United States government jointly published between the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA. And it was basically, you know, it's a report on, you know, nation state activity kind of post 2016 election that Russia was up to, Grizzly Step, blah, blah, blah. And it was a great report. It was one of the first of its kind to come out by the United States government. And to that end, I was like, yes, let's go, baby. United States government, you know, getting that intel down into an unclassified setting and writing it out in a way that people can understand. Let's go. This is a good thing. And then I'm looking at the technical indicators, and like, one of the indicators was basically an IP address pointing to a Yahoo mail server, because the actors at the time were smuggling data by sending, by emailing data through Yahoo. Okay. Problem is, I mean, you already know where this is going. Problem is, you know that 90% of the people read half that report, and then they just overlaid all those indicators on top of their network, and they're like, oh my God, we're seeing it light up, and it's all these things, everything's compromised. And then you look at it, it's like, no, that's Yahoo. Right? It's a Yahoo mail server, right? It's just, yeah, this is normal. Like, right? This is the state of things. And this is like, look, their heart was in exactly the right place. And it was a really good thing for them to do, but God, it left a lot to be desired on the actual empirical data and those indicators that went out. That's where it's like, for me, I'm like, dude, highest quality data as soon as humanly possible, as relevant as possible to them, timely, complete, right? And block grade. Right. So either informative to understand the TTPs or block grade, like block these things, or check to see whether or not you've ever talked to them or they've ever talked to you. And if they have, you might have a problem. And so that's where I think we need to see things go a little bit more.
100%. And I'm going to ask you one last question on, since you mentioned that government report, I think that's a great segue. But then I want to let Chris jump in here because I feel like I hijacked the interview. Sorry, Chris. No, but one last question here is, I've become a big fan of CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, and I found that their known exploitable vulnerabilities catalog is pretty solid. At the very least, it covers some important vulnerabilities that are being exploited right now. So with that, I would like to ask your opinion on CISA's initiative. And we could be specific to the KEV if you want to focus on that. But I would love to hear your perspective on it. Sure.
It is filling an absolutely incredible role that only the government can. And maybe that's a hot take, but it's like, man, this is a government agency whose job is their mandate is to keep United States critical infrastructure safe and to keep us cyber safe, cyber secure, as secure as humanly possible, right? So from my perspective, I'm like, yes, absolutely, 100%. And they're actually putting their money where their mouth is, and they're disseminating data. They're disseminating reporting. They're disseminating lists of software vulnerabilities that are being exploited. And so from my perspective, this is fantastic. The KEV, the Known Exploited Vulnerability Catalog, is filling a sorely needed gap. Because honestly, so what's the alternative for the mom and pop shop, for the library, for the university, for the small managed service provider who's servicing an entire county of public schools or a bunch of hospitals? Like, they don't have any money. They can't go to Qualys. They can't go to Tenable and buy these products that tell them which vulnerabilities they need to care about and which ones they don't, right? They're in the dark. They need help. And they need help in a way that really only the government has the ability to help. So from my perspective, it's fantastic. I hope to see way more of whatever they're smoking at CISA across the government. Truly, I want to see more of that. Specifically on the KEV, we like to have like a friendly competition. So first, and I hope I don't get in trouble for this, but CISA is a customer of ours. And so we do collaborate with them very closely on like what we see to help them get things promoted onto that KEV. We have a fantastic relationship with CISA. At the same time, we also have like a little bit of friendly competition of when a new software vulnerability goes out, like how fast we can get it onto Graynoise and telling our customers about it before they put it on the KEV. And we try to win that race every time. And it's fun because everybody wins, right? Like we want to get these software vulnerabilities on our version of the KEV before they do. And then we map it out. We chart how often we get it right, how often we get it wrong. And it's great for us. And I think honestly, every other cybersecurity vendor should be asking themselves, like, how do I get my data or my insights to feed into the largest impact place humanly possible? And obviously, you're going to want to make as much money as possible as any private company. But I mean, we're cybersecurity companies. We should be cyber securing, right? Like, should we not want to get our insights into as many hands as humanly possible, including the people who just don't have the money and will never have the money to be able to afford our products? Get it to CISA. Get it to CISA so that they can put something on the KEV and they can get the word out to everybody, right? Like, absolutely, we need this. If there's one thing that we can learn from the Russians specifically, it's that we need the United States needs tighter, faster collaboration between the private sector and government. We need to be able to feed data and information back and forth to have people be safer and to achieve more security mission success. And that's something that I think that the United States can learn from the Russians, because, I mean, there's way less red tape in Russia for operating between their private sector and their government. And I think it's something that we need to learn from them, to be more nimble and to be more willing to share information so that we can keep this thing safe. I believe that in my heart.
So, Andrew, you started off in help desk, and then you made your way up to pen tester, security engineer, research and development at a endpoint protection company, and now the founder and CEO of a cybersecurity firm. A lot of our listeners are wanting to get into cybersecurity. A lot of our listeners are in their first job in cybersecurity. What's your message to them? What's the best path for people to get in? And when they're in, what sort of things should they be going looking for? Certificates, higher education? We get this question every week.
Yeah. So cybersecurity is one of those interesting fields that doesn't really follow a lot of the same rules as other industries sort of near its size. So I'll just start by saying, like, first recognize that the concept of computers is relatively new, and the concept of the internet is even newer, and the concept of securing computers on the internet is even newer. So, like, there's really not a lot of prior work. We're talking about like a brand new science and a brand new field. Now, the concept of securing information has been around for thousands of years, but the concept of securing systems on the internet is, or compromising systems on the internet is relatively new. So what that means is that where with medicine and with the law and with, you know, things like that, there's a right way. You go to school and you understand anatomy and you understand the law and the constitution and all this stuff. And there's kind of right ways. There's not a lot of right ways in security. You know, like a lot of the leaders in this industry, when they were born, the internet didn't exist, right? So it's like, how do you square that circle? So my first bit of advice is lean into how there is no right way. That means in cybersecurity specifically, because it's really challenging to find people who are good on paper. So that means based on their experience, based on maybe their education, maybe their certificates, et cetera, it's still challenging to evaluate like, yeah, but is this person going to be successful? Do they know what they're doing? Cybersecurity, much more so than just about anything else, it depends on what you can do. It depends on what you know and what you can do. So from my perspective, I would say the biggest investment that you can do is in your chops and in your know-how. And like actually around like, so again, now it's going to depend on what kind. Cybersecurity is a huge field, all the way from compliance to red team operations, forensics, you know, information assurance. It's massive, right? So you're going to have to corner one of those and actually really sort of understand it. You can start as a generalist where you really just understand things generally. But at some point, you know, you're going to have to understand one of those well enough to be able to pretty consistently provide value. So the short answer is focus as much as you can on your chops and your aptitude. So that's just to say like CTFs are fantastic, right? Like challenges are fantastic. Any kind of online training with a good reputation, there's a lot of it. Open security training. God, there's more than I can really list, but that stuff is all worth its weight in gold. The second thing that I'll say is that there's sort of a built-in series of sort of mechanisms for people to build a career in cybersecurity that are kind of scary, but like giving conference talks, watching conference talks, number one, is a great thing to do for beginners. Number two, do one, give one, even if you are a beginner, right? The amount that you will learn by chasing down a problem or something and then presenting everybody with everything that you learned, the first thing that you're going to find out is that you know more than you thought you did just from doing that. The second one that you're going to find is that like you actually also know less than you thought you did, because the 20 people who are massive experts in that thing are going to come up to you and they're going to tell you all the stuff you didn't know. And you're going to get a whole lot smarter. In terms of penetrating the industry, my advice is this is still a little bit old school. It's kind of who you know. And so I really do recommend that people network. Go to some events, even if it's online networking, like hop in the IRCs, chat with people, go to the conferences, go to the meetups, go to the hacker spaces and meet people. Because the best way to get in the door is to win the confidence of someone and for them to say, man, we could really use somebody like you at this place. The first job is the hardest one to get. Getting into the industry is the hardest one to get. And then after that, you can kind of, as long as you do a good job, you can kind of figure it out from there. My path was that I was basically, if Hector sucked at hacking, that was me when I was in middle school and high school. I was a very, very ineffective black hat. So I got into hacking relatively young. Yeah, I did whatever. I hacked the crap out of my middle school, my high school, and schools that I went to all the time, all day, every day. And then I decided that I didn't really want to look over my back too terribly much for the rest of my life. So I got a job as a pen tester. I did the OSCP, the Offensive Security Certified Professional, which was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my entire life leading up to that. It's a 24-hour exam that I failed. And then I took it again. And then I passed it. I think I was 17 or 18 when I did it. And so then after that, that one certification is actually, it's very well respected. And so that's one that where you at least kind of say like, hey, this person clearly kind of knows what they're doing if they've gotten that, if they've earned it. And then beyond that, so my first job was security consulting. My job was to compromise systems and write reports on how I did it. My job was to make some CEO or CISO understand the risk to their business. So it was really kind of a comms. It was a technical job and then it was a comms job. And then after that, I worked for a higher end security consulting firm, it was a little bit more boutique. This is where I was around people that were really smart, like a lot smarter than me. And I just wanted to absorb everything from them, right? Like it was every day was a gift to be there because I was the dumbest dude in the room. And so I just got to absorb all this incredible information from all these really smart people. And my third job was at Endgame. This is where I was working as a security researcher. This is where I was no longer on the clock. I wasn't a consultant anymore. I had, you know, 1 month or 3 months or 6 months to work on like a much more larger, complex cybersecurity problem. That was when I really got to learn about a lot about technology, like really about the computers that are running under the hood. And I was lucky to be able to do that for some really cool problems that the United States intelligence community was running into. And again, I got to work with some of the smartest people I've ever worked with in my entire life. And then to me, after those, I said to myself, I want to start a company because, I mean, for a few different reasons. I don't want a handful of reasons to start a company. But for me, it was like, hey, I have a vision of some technology and nobody else sees it. I see it, but nobody else sees it. The second one was like, I want to learn how to build a business. I want to learn about business. I want to learn how the world works. I've got all these smart people that I know and I'd love to hire a few of them. And then it was like, you know, I mean, the money, right? Which is terrible, but it's like, I don't want to work for the rest of my life. So it was one of those things where it was like, maybe I can make a little bit of money and maybe take a year or two off at some point, right? Which is something that I really cared a lot about doing. Then Gray Noise became something that I didn't necessarily, it became bigger and it took off much more than I thought it would. And here I am. But the one thing that I've found that is consistent is that people overcomplicate things sometimes. So you want to get into the industry, you just need to get that first job. It doesn't matter how much it sucks. It doesn't matter how lame, how boring the work is. Again, my first job was in a call center and technical support. I was resetting 200 passwords a day, and I was talking to old ladies to fix their printers in their branches, in their bank branches. And I was, you know, and all this stuff. It was not glorious at all. But I learned about enterprise networks. I learned about Active Directory. I learned about remote access. I learned about procedures. I learned about talking to people on the phone. And these were skills that were so invaluable. Again, there's nothing worse than someone who thinks that they're better than like a low level job. You know what I mean? And so from my perspective, you're not better than anything, right? You're not better than anything. So get that. I don't know if I can say this on this podcast, but get that shit job. Get that job. That. And yeah, get That's that shit message. Job. Get that shit job. Work that shit job, right? Yeah. And if you can't knock it out of the park on that, why would anyone hire you for the better one, for the security one, right? So you don't have to get the perfect job. You don't have to get the cyber job. Just first get into tech at all. Be a sysadmin, be a help desk person, right? Teach yourself enough to get there. Like, do whatever it takes to get that first one and then just knock it out of the park. That's all you got to do. And then do it again. And then do it again. And then do it again. And then you want to start a business? Fine. Start a business. All you have to do is build something that people want or build a service that people want and sell it to them. And then do it again, and then do it again, and then do it again. And then you wake up one day and you have millions in revenue and you're still a high school dropout. You have no idea how it happened. And, you know, and it's Gray Noise. But from my perspective, it's like, don't overcomplicate it, right? One foot in front of the other. You're not going to end up in your final dream role overnight. It's not going to happen. Right? Just get that first job. Get that job running cables at an elementary school. Get that job doing audio video for a local rec center. Like, go to the university and bug the overworked cybersecurity and tech teams and tell them you'll work for free if you can. Just however many hours, just you gotta work. You gotta just.
That's how I did
it. It's a gift to you. It's a gift to you to have that exposure. So from my perspective, I mean, again, you're not gonna teleport there. You just gotta get that first one, and then you gotta do another one. That's it.
That's perfect advice, Andrew. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for your message. Again, reach out to Gray Noise at graynoise.io. Andrew's on X, not Twitter, Hector. It's on X. You're going to piss off Elon if you keep calling it Twitter like you did. He's at Andrew __ Morris, three underscores, and at graynoise.io. So, Andrew, thanks so much for being on the show.
Chris, thank you so much. Hector, oh, my God. I could talk to you for hours. I could talk to you for hours, man.
I know, bro.
The energy you have, man, the passion you have for what's going on in the industry and what you have out there, it's fantastic. So I would really appreciate having you on.
Thank you guys so much. Seriously.